You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everyone, to Trek FM's local watering hole, where it is going to be imperative tonight that you get a drink from Ruby. Make sure she just keeps them coming to you. We've got a very interesting topic, and I've got some great people here with me. In fact, I'd like to call this my Marvel posse, and we got Andy. Andy, it is great to have you back in the 602 because, you're one of the key members of the Marvel posse.
Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, I like this new nickname. We're going to stick with it. And then, of course, Daniel, you would have to be here as well because, well, we make up the trinity now of the Marvel posse.
Yeah, I will say I'm happy to be here as part of the posse. You know, the topic, we'll get into that.
Yeah. Well, before we do jump in the topic, just want to remind everybody that 602 Club is a part of Trek FM, which we have 20 different shows for you to check out. You can find them all at itunes.com/Trek FM. You can also find us online at trek.fm. You can find all the shows that we do. I encourage everyone to check out the different shows. I mean, we have a representation from so many of the shows here. Daniel on Earl Grey. We have Andy on Women at Warp. And then myself with, of course, the 602 Club here, The Orb, Literary Treks. And then we have so many more shows for you to check out. So do that at itunes.com/trekfm. If you'd like to contact us, we'd love to hear from you. Just go to trek.fm/contact. You could leave us a voicemail. We'd love to have some voicemails about the show, especially I think we'd like to have some voicemails on the topic tonight. You can do that in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We're also on Twitter at trekfm. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And, of course, our listeners-only discussion group, the Babel Conference, and more on that later. Guys, so we are going to be talking about the brand-new film, Fantastic Four. And interesting topic because I think anybody who's looked or is kind of aware of film knows that if you go to Rotten Tomatoes right now, this movie is at a whopping 9% good reviews. I'd kind of like to be the guy who was like one of the 8 reviews that was good for the film. And I'd love to talk to him to see how he decided that it was going to be okay to make this movie at least fresh in his eyes. I don't know. It's interesting. The Fantastic Four is a comic that's been around since 1961. It really was revolutionary for its time. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby really developed some characters that people really latched onto. I mean, and it was very different from what anybody had seen really before. I mean, these are characters who kind of squabbled. They would hold grudges. They could be petty. And it was just a really different way of looking at comic book characters. And in the end, throughout the 60s and then the 70s and the 80s, Marvel and its approach really started to take over. And in the 2000s, the Fantastic Four were kind of remodeled in the Ultimate Fantastic Four in the Ultimate Marvel Universe, which kind of changed the way the characters interacted. A lot of times it would make them younger. And I guess in the end, a little bit more peevish. And there have been 2 previous attempts at films. This is where Chris Evans first suited up in movies as superhero. And he was playing the Johnny Storm in that film. And those previous movies had the wonderful Rotten Tomatoes scores of 27 and 37, respectively. Do you guys have any history with the Fantastic Four? And of course, I mean, you know, in the 2000s, 2005, and then later on with Silver Surfer, did you guys see those?
Yes, but I barely remember them.
I also saw them and kind of agree with Rotten Tomatoes that they may be 2 to 3 times better than this film. It's not saying they're good. I'm not going to say that they're good films. I'm just saying they are definitely an improvement over what we get here.
I think the fact that Chris Evans is in the movie helps. I mean, he wasn't a huge star then, but I liked him even then. And so I think probably a little bit of my Captain America love transfers back if I were to go back and watch those films. It was a different time for comic book movies, and they were kind of just cheesy and goofy. And in some ways, that's a little bit more lovable than what we get in this movie. You know, the Ultimate Universe from Marvel does take things into the wonderful catchphrase that everybody loves to throw around, a little bit darker, a little bit grittier, and everybody's even a little bit more jerky towards each other in the Ultimate Universe. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that this movie decided, one, to go with that, so the characters could be younger, but two, so that you could take what I think is funny, the idea of a Rock Man, Elastiboy, Invisibility Girl, and a Human Rocket, and make those darker and grittier, and I mean, they're just ridiculous. I mean, but that's what should be kind of fun about it, right?
Yeah, well, you would think. Yeah, if you know, the leader of your team is a guy who can make his body part springy, slinky-like, yeah, you're going to have to kind of take it for what it is and just kind of enjoy it. Totally, it doesn't make any sense. This film makes zero sense. And it's one of the biggest problems with it is the fact that, of all of the comic book properties, and there are a couple that are on the same level, but the Fantastic Four is something that should just be like in the beginning, he mentions that the teacher mentions, oh, what are you working on, your flying car? And he's like, no, I've given that up, which I actually thought was actually a pretty good nod. But that's like, they have a flying car and they all do their thing and it's supposed to be fun. And this movie has 0% fun.
Yeah, it really does. And I think I've heard it said on another podcast, and I really like this. You know, the Fantastic Four has to be fantastical. You know, it needs to be out there and kind of ridiculous. You know, if somebody has a jetpack, say like in like Tomorrowland or something, that's kind of what you expect to see in a Fantastic Four movie, like a goofy, off the wall, science fiction-y science based around some characters like this. And honestly, what comes to mind for me is The Incredibles. And that's basically like you shoved, a spy movie in with the Fantastic Four and made it with a family and made it animated. It's the same thing. You know, you have the same type of characters, basically, and they're able to pull it off really well because they get the fact that there's kind of a winking at the camera campiness to it. I mean, when Edna tells you that you shouldn't have a cape, no capes. I mean, you know you're winking at the audience, and this movie is taking itself so seriously. It kind of leaves me hanging. I don't know.
The Incredibles is my behind the Toy Story series is my absolute favorite Pixar film, and I just it's amazing to think of if you take that as a kind of a prototype of how to do a good movie like this. Especially since it's obviously very clearly has a lot of Fantastic Four influences, they could not have been further from the mark with this film. Like, and really, that The Incredibles is more the Fantastic Four and a half because you have Jack, but
oh yeah,
you know, but it's such a great fun film, but still has those like really emotional moments because guess what, they are a family in that film. And that's where, like, you start to feel for them and where you start to identify with them. And at no point in this film do I identify with the number one thing I think that comic fans love about the Fantastic Four. I never felt like these people were a family. I don't even think these people wanted to be around each other. Even the brother and sister didn't really even get along. And it was like, and then all of a sudden they do for the final battle. And that, and like, no, I didn't. You didn't even earn that. Not even one bit. Like, not for 1 second of this film that I think anybody even liked anybody else in the room. I don't know how I'm supposed to follow you on this journey.
Well, Andy, so this movie, you know, a lot of comic book movies take themselves seriously, or at least the subject matter seriously. All the Marvel films take themselves seriously that we've seen from Marvel. The X-Men films do too. But they also know how to interweave the humor and the fun in there to make it work, you know. And it's kind of interesting to me to watch a Marvel movie like this with the Fantastic Four and the people that we're talking about basically try to go all Dark Knight on us, you know. Whereas, I don't know, what do you think about that idea of like the seriousness in superhero movies, and actually how to make that work? Can you make that work, Andy, with a film like Fantastic Four? Does it need to be just more fun?
I think you can. Look at Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is a super weird movie if you break it down, and it has some really fantastical, strange things in it. I mean, they have a tree and a talking raccoon. And they managed to make it both fun and serious. Like, at no point do they, like, don't take that world building seriously in that movie. It's just the fact that they have fun with it. They know what kind of movie they're making. In this movie, somebody asked me, like, what the number one thing that I think they went wrong with in this movie. And there was two things that come up to me. And the first and most important thing is something that Daniel just touched on, which is that these characters barely interact with each other. We have no sense of who they are. We have no sense of their relationships. Basically, in the end, we don't care about them at all. And you can see, like, if you put it right next to Guardians, Guardians does a good job of making us understand who those characters are and why such strange and disparate characters would work together throughout a course of a movie. So it can be done. In this movie, they don't even try. Like, I'm pretty sure that Sue and Johnny have two scenes in the whole movie in which they directly interact, and both of them are, like, passing. Like, 2 seconds and they're done. How are we supposed to get a sense of them as family members when we don't get to see them be family members? Or, like, you have this whole story about how Ben and Reed are supposed to be best friends, and we barely see them together. It's just, I don't know how they expect us to care about characters when it doesn't seem like they care about their characters, and they spend no time developing them or their relationships. It's really disappointing.
I think you hit something on the head. You know, when I think of Guardians, I always just think of the opening and how they start with the swagger. You know, this is going to be fun. They immediately let you know, we're here to have a great time, so come along with us. And you know, and yeah, I mean, they're doing world building and everything, but the very first thing they tell you in that film is, we're going to have fun. So just, you know, let some things go, like, you know, a talking tree and a raccoon, and just come along with on the ride with us. And I think starting off with that kind of swagger, it allows you to let go of all the ridiculousness and just enjoy yourself in a fun, you know, imaginative way. Like, this is what, you know, film can do. We can tell silly stories with outrageous characters, and that's the fun of film, you know, because we just pulled from a comic book. I mean, that's why we all read comic books in the first place. We enjoy that kind of stuff, the stuff that you can't really do in reality, but we'd like to see happen somehow, you know? And they just mire this movie in this kind of like serious malaise that it never transcends to ever, like, I never smile in this movie. I never laugh in this movie. I mean, if people thought Man of Steel was like that, he never smiled. Like, I don't think these characters ever smile. I mean, they get drunk and I don't even know if they smile. You know, it's crazy. I couldn't understand that. You know, characters that have these crazy powers that they get, Like, I don't know.
I can tell you that in my theater, the only time that the audience in my theater had fun is when the Deadpool trailer played. that there's and then there was 1 second where Johnny goes to fist bump Reed, and Reed is just like awkward dude, like flail. And then my theater went, huh. And that was like the sum total of the enjoyment of the people in the audience in my theater. I think what happened is they mistook gritty with grim. And I mean, just like depressing.
Ben Grimm.
I like it.
Nice. See, now Daniel has just laughed during this podcast more than he laughed in the entirety of the hour and 46 minutes he sat through Fantastic Four.
And you know, it's so, I'm really glad that we brought up Guardians, because it's a really interesting contrast. Like the scene in Guardians before the climax, when they're all in the ship, and there's, you know, the, oh, now I'm standing, and we all look like jackasses scene, like, where, like, they're coming together as a team. Like, that moment is earned in that film. And, like, you feel like these characters have been through transitions together and kind of have learned from each other and are now all of their goals are together, and they want to do something. And then the same... the parallel scene in this film, which I guess is the 2 second talking scene between the two fights at the climax of the film, you don't get any of that. It's not earned at all. It's like, it's so all of a sudden, well, they can't beat all of us. Teamwork. And it's like, okay, like, there's, you know what I mean? Like, oh, we never thought to do something together. There are 4 of us against 1 guy. It's just,
well,
it's so
as developed as Doom's plan, because basically the other problem I have, besides the fact that what is that third act? Like, we finally get their powers and a fight scene, and it's all in the last like 20 minutes. And then they're like, okay, we're done, bye. But the best part to me is that Doom comes back and he's like, hey guys, super into genocide now. Okay, I'm off to do my evil plan. Like, we have no sense of why he might suddenly want to destroy all life on Earth. Like, it goes from him kind of a hipster that, you know, doesn't trust the government to genocide. And like, there's like no transition whatsoever.
He ends up too looking like a loner hipster board reject. It's horrible.
Where did he get the cloak from on the other planet? I really, really, really want to know. He shows up with the cloak.
He kind of fashioned it out of a rudimentary lathe. Okay. Before we kind of complete, we're going to definitely talk a lot more about some of this stuff. I wanted to be able to talk about, as we do on the show, there will be plenty of time to talk about things we didn't like. But there are some things that I did find in the movie that I did like. And there aren't a lot. I'm not going to lie to you, folks. Because I wouldn't do that to you. We've built up a trust over so many. And in fact, this is... with all of the supplemental episodes and this is episode number 50, even so it says 43. And so, you know, I'm not going to lie to you, but there are a couple things that I'd like. So were there any things for you that as you did watch through the movie that you found that you liked? You might not have loved, but you liked. Andy?
I did like the fact that they brought up why Sue is white and Johnny is black and dismissed it all in 10 seconds because that's all the time it needed. After we had to suffer through all of these people being like, but how? I mean, he sets himself on fire, sure, but how can he be black? And so I really liked the fact that they bring it up and dismiss it in like the same breath. I don't know if they were doing it to just be dismissive of why it's such a big deal to people that, you know, there's a race issue there, or if it's just they spent as much time on any other development, 10 seconds, you know, for each character. And so they just threw it out there and then it's over. But I did like that, that they didn't spend a whole lot of time obsessing over that. This is their family and that's how it works. So I did like that. I would say that they cast four really great young actors, and I'm really sad that the four of them are wasted in this movie, because I really like all four of them as actors in numerous other projects, and I really, really like Michael B. Jordan, and I really want Michael B. Jordan to be a huge star, and it really kills me that this is like his first big international blockbuster movie, and it's this.
Bomb.
Yeah, I just, that makes me so sad, because he's capable of so much more. So I would say, like, at least that they did bring great actors on board, even if they completely wasted them, and even if they bogged them down with a lot of really grim, depressing. I'm really not making a pun. Stop laughing. That's just really the word that comes to mind when I think of this movie.
You can't say grim on a Fantastic Four podcast.
From now on, I'll say joyless. Will that make you not giggle?
That
okay. So just you know, sinking them in this joyless dialogue, and then it's sad to me. But good actors. There's my two things. Took me 2 days to come up with them.
How about you, Daniel? Were you able to find anything in the film as you watched through that? Okay, I like this.
Yeah, well, I said that I liked the reference to the Fantastic Four car early on in the film. That was cute. Yeah, that's what I liked. Honestly, I don't...
I liked when it ended.
I don't like the ending. Don't misunderstand that. I did like when the film ended.
Just liked when the movie was over.
I like the prospect. What I want to take away from this is I like the concept, the idea that maybe now Fox is going to pull a Sony and release the rights to Marvel. I really like that idea. That would be fantastic.
That's already, they've already said, no, we're committed to this somehow. Yeah, so it'll be a cold day in hell when they're dead cold fingers release the rights to, you know, X-Men and Fantastic Four.
If they keep losing their projected $60 million a picture, we'll see how long that lasts for anyways.
I think you would have had a better chance of Charlton Heston becoming a gun hater than giving up the rights. So, Andy, I'm with you. I've seen all of these people in other movies. Miles Teller is, I think, a great young actor. He was in The Spectacular Now, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. I really liked him in Whiplash. Michael B. Jordan, of course, really enjoyed his performances in Friday Night Lights. Kate Mara, I've saw her in House of Cards, and she was excellent. And Jamie Bell, of course, I remember all the way back from Billy Elliot. So, I mean, all of these people can act if you give them things to act with. And it was unfortunate, like you said, they're just not given anything to do. But each one, they even play the characters as well as possible. It's just like, there's just nothing for them to do.
I mean, Jamie Bell, it was like, what, 10? When he did Billy Elliot, that. And that is a just epic performance. And Michael B. Jordan must have been around 14 when he was on The Wire and did one of the most like heartbreaking TV arcs of all time on The Wire. And he, you know, really showed his chops right off the bat there. And then both of them have just, like, Jamie Bell has been kicking around the indie world for a while and doing interesting stuff. And again, for both of them, this should have been like a big stepping stone for them in their careers and breaking into a more commercial market. And then Michael B. Jordan, like he just did Fruitvale Station, which was really good, and he probably should have been nominated for an Oscar for. And then Miles Teller was just nominated for an Oscar, as you said, for Whiplash. It's like they've got all of the, like, their cast is great. So maybe if they are really going to hold on to the rights with their cold, dead hands, like, if they are going to do that and they keep these actors, but they get a different director and a different screenwriter or a different mix of things, maybe they can make Fantastic Four 2 work, but I just don't... I mean, like, this must be one of the hugest bombs that we've ever seen for a superhero movie. I mean, the buzz for it is just horrible. I was like you, Matthew, in that I wanted to go in as clean as possible because I was hearing bad buzz about it, but I didn't want it to influence me, and I really wanted to like it. When you have reviews that are calling it a cheese grater for your soul, and then also add the commercial aspect of it, like, it's not even just getting crushed by the reviews, it's also losing them tons of money. That's rough to come back from. That's rough to bring a sequel into the mix and expect people to give you their money again. I don't see how that really works. They would have to really do a huge turnaround there.
You know, I know I brought up this point to both of you, but I wanted to mention it because constantly I'm seeing this idea that the cast is amazing and, you know, is wasted on this film. And I'm not disagreeing with that. It may be true, but I'm only familiar with a handful or so of these characters. Like, I didn't know the guy who played Reed or the guy who played Johnny or Sue. And I will say that because all of the actors seem bored in this film to me. So obviously this isn't going to be their best film, and that's fine. I get that. The one miscasting decision, I would say, or at least I don't see the, I don't really get the good casting, besides Doom, which we won't talk about right now, but, is Jamie Bell, right? That's the guy who plays, the thing, yes. Right? His performance was fine. He didn't sound like the thing. I don't know. To me, the thing sounds more like, Michael Chiklis did in the original Fantastic Four. I thought he was a better thing, if that makes any sense, than this guy. He was the only person that I felt was like, I don't really
definitely get it. Is an odd choice. I mean, there's really no more like a divergent of actors than you can get. Like, you put Jamie Bell and Michael Chiklis next to each other and they're both going to bring you completely different things, both in the terms of how they act and like just their physicality and vibe, completely different. And I can see preferring Michael Chiklis. I think Jamie Bell could have been interesting, honestly, because I mean, it's not like he had to be like some sort of meathead beforehand. You know, once he transforms, that changes the whole physicality aspect of it. So I think it could have been interesting. I don't think it works. I don't know if that's because of Jamie Bell or if it's because of the writing. I'm going to tend towards the writing and the direction, but I hear you. And I can see that too. Like, when Michael Chiklis was cast for Fantastic Four, I was like, that is pretty great. That is pretty great casting for that. So,
I mean, he already looks like the thing.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was part of it. Is like they were like he's gonna look like he could be turn into that, you know. Whereas Jamie Bell is a small framed guy, especially in comparison. So, I can see like that. I mean, I guess anybody's gonna bulk up when they're attacked by radioactive rocks, but whatever.
Yeah, well, and that was the thing. Like, it's not even so much the way he physically looks, it's his voice. And his voice is a smaller voice in a lot of ways, especially if you're comparing him to Michael Chiklis. It's just, you know, which I guess makes sense because you don't, you know, when you're a person and you get transformed into a rock monster, what difference does your voice make? But it's just, to me, like in my head, I now when I think of the thing, it's clobbering time, you know, and like I think of Michael Chiklis's kind of over the top accent and gravelly voice. That makes more sense to me as to the thing as a character. But it was the only you know, actor that kind of gave me pause.
Well, that was one of the things that I ended up actually kind of liking about the movie. Doing a rock monster thing in the first place. I mean, we know all the way back from Star Trek V all the way to now, it's a really difficult thing to try and pull off, and it doesn't really necessarily work well most of the time. And luckily, at least in this film, he doesn't look like the orange Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that the original kind of did. And I kind of liked, I thought that they did a great job. I just don't know why he doesn't have pants on. it's just weird. other than that, I thought the thing was very successful in its look and the way it was animated. I mean, that's one of the very few things in this movie, I think, where the graphics didn't fail us. You know, the computer-generated effects in this film are terrible for the most part. But I feel like all of their budget went to making him look good. And for the most part, I was very pleased with how he looked. It just... And I thought Jamie Bell did a great job voicing that character and making it deeper. And I don't know if they did anything to his voice or anything for it, but it just came off great to me, and I really liked that. And then on top of that, the score for this movie I think is one of the best Marvel scores that I've ever heard. On a whole, Marvel films haven't been known for their good themes or scores. But this movie had a really beautiful kind of sweeping theme in there that, and I've been listening to the soundtrack, and it's my favorite part of the movie is just the music. It had kind of like a motion picture-esque quality to it, like it's something that Jerry Goldsmith might do, and it's Marco Beltrami and Philip Glass working together, and it's an amazing score. Unfortunately, it just, you know, he can't make this movie better because everything else went wrong. So
one point I was thinking about when you were talking about the thing is I would have loved, especially on like the TV segments where they were or the video segments where they were showing the thing smashing stuff up and stuff, if they, you know, even though he doesn't have one, if they blurred out his little orange thing.
Well, he doesn't have one. That's one of his great tragedies, apparently.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't ever even have to eat or go to the bathroom at all anymore, which we've answered. Yeah, so it's crazy. So, apparently they're both doomed. So what went wrong with this movie?
Everything. sorry.
Yes. But specifically, and have you guys done any reading, kind of, to see what had happened? I mean, because there, it seems like there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that created a very toxic combination to create this. So, yeah, what went wrong, and what can maybe studios learn from this to, you know, not have this kind of thing happen again?
They hired Josh Trank after he did one movie, and that one movie was Chronicle, which Michael B. Jordan is a million times better in, by the way. And that movie is basically, it's about three teenagers who get superpowers and then wreak havoc. So you can kind of see where their thinking was. But the thing is Chronicle is also very dark and depressing. I don't know, like because I think we can agree that Fantastic Four has been a troubled franchise. They have had a lot of trouble bringing it to the big screen. Similar, I would say, to the Hulk. So if you're going to put somebody in charge of your $120 million movie or whatever it was, maybe not make it their sophomore effort, and maybe, you know, pick somebody who has some experience in lighthearted, fun movies, because it seems to me like they got exactly what they should have expected to get, because everything that works in Chronicle doesn't work for Fantastic Four. Chronicle is it's supposed to be dark. It's all about the problems with getting power and how power destroys and stuff like that. I mean, that's not what you want in a Fantastic Four movie. But, I mean, even the palette, like the colors are all the same and the tone is the same. So, I don't know. I think that's the first problem. The second problem is they hired him, and then apparently they didn't stop getting involved. So it seems like there was a lot of studio versus director interference, which is usually not a good sign. They don't trust your vision. We've started to hear rumors about his professionalism, I don't know how true that is, how much of that is just everybody right now trying to pass the blame to each other. But it does seem like it started right from that beginning of that director choice. And everything else kind of stemmed from that.
You know, I actually think that the problem is more fundamental than that. So what we haven't mentioned is the 1993-1994 Fantastic Four film that was literally produced and created just so that they could, and never released, just so that they could keep the rights to the franchise. And essentially, that's what this is as well. It's a power grab, because if they don't produce this film, they don't get the rights anymore. Those rights revert back to Marvel. So, you know, you're an executive at Fox, and you're going to lose the rights to this potentially lucrative franchise. So you have to make a movie. So there was no, like, creative vision or idea why this movie should be made. It was just, we have to make a movie in order to keep these rights. So who cares? Who cares who directs it or who writes it? Or apparently, if they really are hell-bent on keeping these rights, who cares who even comes and sees the movie? If it's even any good, we just want to hold on to the rights. And at that point, if your only goal, I mean, of course, it's the goal of every movie to make money, but you know what I'm saying? If it's like just for this singular purpose, and there's no overarching vision or idea that kind of would cement everybody together, it makes total sense to me that the studio didn't really care what the director was doing or what the writer had written, and it was all just a cluster. And that, I think, is the fundamental problem with this film, because nobody seems to be on the same page, and it fails on almost every single level.
See, I would disagree with that, though, Daniel. I think that what went wrong is that they started off with the wrong idea, which was to do the ultimate Fantastic Four idea, which is to start off in a universe where, one, they're all teenagers, two, that means in the ultimate universe, everybody's much more peevish, and I'm using that word because it's PG, towards each other, and three, because it is darker, and I think that as the foundation is what doesn't work for this. You can do that with X-Men. You can do that with Batman. You can do that with, you can even do it a little bit with Superman. But you can't do it. I think, Daniel, you'd even agree, Man of Steel is way better than this
movie. I will totally agree with you. That
so, I mean, you can at least go as far as they did in Man of Steel and make a much better film than this. I think that was, for me, when I'm thinking about it, that's what goes wrong, is that they just start with the wrong idea that all superhero movies need to have this darker, grittier feel. They need to feel someone, like, they need to be Nolan influenced, basically. And that's obviously not the case, as we already talked about with Guardians of the Galaxy, that you don't have to do that. Now, again, Marvel takes its films seriously. It treats the characters with respect. I think what happens here is there's absolutely no respect, really, for the characters or the history, and yes, it's very much reminiscent of the Ultimate Universe, but is that really the best universe to try and put on screen here? Because having this almost be like a horror movie where these characters get these powers in the worst possible way, and they're kind of transformed and mutilated, like, again, like, I don't think that's the way to go. And I think that's what goes wrong, is that they just start off with this idea and they keep building on that, and it gets away from them. And then because of the studio interference, because of probably what happened with the director, them butting heads, all the other things. And I'm not here to trash Josh Trank or anything like that. I'm not speculating on what happened, but apparently there were things that did happen. I don't know what they are, but it's evident on what we get. And all that puts together a movie that does have no vision, that does look like it was made by amateurs, that, you know, that's kind of what happens, because I just think the very beginning idea, I mean, the writer in this movie, one of the writers is Simon Kinberg, and he helped write the last X-Men movie. He's works on Star Wars Rebels. The guy knows how to do his stuff, you know? So something happened. It's like the stars aligned, and unfortunately it aligned to make this just a horrible movie. And that is too bad.
We should say that there are some people that like this movie. Yes, for one, Mike Schindler of Standard Orbit.
He did give it a 3-star.
It's not like he thought it was a great, awesome masterpiece. He was just like, yeah, it's an okay movie. You know, so there are people that didn't hate it as much as we did. So, I mean, if you're trying to decide whether to go or not, I would say don't go. But also, no, I mean, make your own decision on whether you want to go. And although the three of us are very much in agreement that this was a failure of a movie, there are people who have liked it. So just to brighten it a little bit, there's...
I'm trying so hard. And one other thing, though, just to your point, Matthew, you know, if the fundamental problem with this film is this gritty ultimate universe outlook on the movie, then I think you're forgetting that we already had two Fantastic Four films that are not based in that and are, by all accounts, maybe slightly less failures, but failures nonetheless. Like, it's not just that. I mean, I agree that that's probably one of the biggest problems is how they kind of tonally, how they set this film. But it's not the only problem. And it's clear that it's maybe, like you mentioned earlier, the Hulk. Maybe it's just really hard to make a movie featuring these characters. Maybe it's not a simple formula. Maybe it's... Everybody loves the Hulk in the Avenger films, but they, for the life of them, they can't figure out how to make him work by himself. Maybe the Fantastic Four just doesn't translate well to the big screen. Who knows? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they just haven't found the right creative team. But we now have two very disparate, very separate versions of Fantastic Four in the movies, and everybody hates all of them. So I like maybe it's a blending of the two that needs to happen, or you have to get the right creative team or whatever. But it maybe the Fantastic Four just isn't a good movie because the Fantastic Four just doesn't make for a good movie. I don't know.
It almost seems like it needs to be the earnestness of Captain America when the original First Avenger and the fun of Guardians. And if you kind of put those two things together, you might get a better Fantastic Four movie, I think, because both of those films do some amazing things. You know, you get the character who gets his powers in Captain America, learning how to use those powers and, you know, how to fight injustice and all that. And then, you know, in the Guardians, you have that crazy outlandish fun with some crazy characters, you know, and I think in the end, the Thing is probably one of the weirdest, craziest characters. He is very much kind of like the Hulk in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I don't know. You raise a really great question, Daniel, to which Hollywood obviously does not have an answer, and I don't know if we have any answers, but I do think that maybe looking to some of the things that Marvel Studios had done, if they had done that, they might have. Honestly, as we said before, just look at The Incredibles and you kind of have an idea of how cool the Fantastic Four could be. And part of that is not apologizing for how goofy they are. Just embrace it. Embrace the weird goofiness that is the Fantastic Four. And I think that anytime that really a superhero movie tries to outsmart its source material, we really get this kind of thing. You're just like, you know? Because at least if they just, like, really played with the source material, like, straight up, which they still haven't done in the Fantastic Four movies, I don't know, maybe it would have worked better. So, story for you guys.
There was a story here. What was the story?
Yeah, there was a story. I noticed that the movie starts, and he's in Oyster Bay. The two kids, and I was like, are they going to pass like Spider-Man's house? like, is he live next door? Because it really does look exactly the same neighborhood as they always put Peter Parker in.
That would have made this movie a thousand times better. That one cameo alone would have been like mind-blowing.
I will say that I actually did kind of, I liked the very, very beginning. Like the, you know, little Ben and little Reed, like, and making the teleporter in his garage. I thought that was all pretty cute. I think, okay, here's the problem with the story. Besides the fact that there really isn't. It's so weird. There, like, if you really think about it, very little happens in this movie. But I think the weirdest thing about it is that they spend so much time before we get their powers. And then they skip all of the time where we would be seeing them learn about their powers. They skip that and flash forward. And then they have their final fight. And that is the weirdest superhero movie pacing I've ever seen. Because I remember I was actually actively trying not to look at my phone and text and stuff because I hate that. But I was also so bored that I it was hard for me to just like sit still. At one point, though, when they are going after the final climactic doom battle, I actually did check my phone because I was like, wait a second. You have to have an opening action battle to like have them learn their powers and work together and learn their limitations. They have to like lose one and then they come back stronger, you know? And I check and I'm like, wait a second, this movie is 10 minutes out from being done. That can't be right. And then the end. I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? I mean, it's not even that I wanted more because I wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. But I was also just like shocked. I was like, how do you spend an hour or so of your movie with just slow, glacially paced, non-characterization origin story? And then do your climactic battle in the last, like, 20 minutes and then end the movie. That's just, I can't, if you did a graph of that.
You'd do it just like this, Andy. I mean, this is how you do that. Just,
let's not forget, right, that the only reason the Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom have their powers is because they got drunk. That's it.
Hey, man, they got drunk and they stole the space car. The teleporting space car. That's what happens when super smart kids get drunk.
I mean, it's so bad. This bothered me the most. This middle of the movie scene where, you know, nobody ever remembers who designed the Apollo rocket. Why don't we go first? And then like, and it was really funny. I was reading a review and they were talking about the scene where They send the really poorly CG'd chimpanzee to this planet, right? And they bring it back, and the guy comes up and he's like, you know what? We should get NASA involved. You know, somebody that's over the age of, I don't know, 22. And which seems like a completely reasonable argument to make at that point of the film. And they're like, no, we want to go. Nobody will remember us if we don't go now. Let's go now. And then they go and do everything wrong, literally everything wrong. And they come back and they have their powers. And then they hate the fact that they have their. It's just an example
of the stunningly poor decision making that characterizes a great deal of this movie. Which the characters make inexplicable decisions that don't make any sense. I really like the part where they're on in whatever they changed. They kind of changed it up. They call it what, Planet Zero or something. Anyway, so they're there, and first of all, that chimpanzee like didn't leave the pod. So like they don't know that like going out into the actual area is going to be safe at all, which it clearly wasn't.
But they go out and they're like...
No. One test. Totally it's fine.
Yeah. So they go out there and then they're like, you know what? This is like green stuff. I'm going to stick my hand in it. That seems like a really good idea.
It's green. I better stick my hand in it.
And then, hang on. And I really have to bring this point home. The second time they go, they don't even bring spacesuits. Presumably there's no air on this planet. They just go and they're like, well, whatever.
Well, they're fantastic now.
Oh my God. It's so bad. It's so stupid. And let's also bring up the fact, Andy, I'm glad you're here. So four of these characters have been like slaving hard on this machine for presumably months, possibly longer. You know, you've got Doom, you've got Reed, you've even Johnny, I guess, kind of, because he can build anything, even with a broken
except
arm.
Except for an engine that works and then, well enough to go over a certain RPM. Anyways.
So, but all of these guys are going to go to the planet, and nobody thinks, oh, hey, you know who would be useful? Somebody who designed the suits and has been around the project since the very start. They never even think to ask Sue to come
along. You know who has to come, though?
She just gets left.
Daniel, she's the girl. We got to keep her safe, okay?
I love, though, that like they're like, not Sue, who's been here the whole time and like is a scientist. No. We need to bring the guy from back home. And, like, we're going to wait for him to wake up and come all the way over here and be like, let's go. And he has no training or anything. Here's the thing, too, is I really hate... Okay, we're talking about how bad the ending is, but let's talk about something else, another inexplicable decision. In that, apparently... this guy who's running this huge science project goes to, like, high school science fairs just to check him out. Like, see, hey, maybe somebody's doing, you know, quantum physics in this random, right next to the volcano, the baking soda volcano is going to be the next scientific breakthrough.
It might be a high school science fair, but it looks
more
like an elementary
school. Well, there are like little kids everywhere. Anyways, okay, so he picks them up there. And then presumably we're told that Ben and Reed have been working on this for the last, 10 years. And they're like, okay, Reed, it's like scholarship for you, Reed. Good job, Reed. And none for Ben Grimm. They just leave him there. And then Reed goes off to the school and Ben is just left behind. And like, I don't understand, like, at least bring him along. But then like you make your big breakthrough and that's when you remember to call him. But Sue, you know, whatever, Sue, none for you either, Sue. It's really frustrating. The decision making is stunning.
What I don't get to is that, Andy, you mentioned the pacing. And I don't, and you can totally tell that this movie has so many scenes that are missing, because there's that whole section where he runs away, where Reed runs away, and that whole area is the time when normally in the movie they'd be discovering their powers, figuring out how to use them, all that kind of stuff, and instead we spend this whole time on this chase. And we get none of the fun that you're supposed to get when people have superpowers. Like, and it really doesn't mean anything. Like, the whole scene of them finding him and what he was doing and why he ran away, none of it's really explained. You kind of have to infer from, as the audience, okay, well, I guess he's trying to get back to the planet so that he can, you know, find a way to fix them. But... It comes to moot. Like, it doesn't matter that he ran away. It only just matters so that they can skip ahead of time a year. But there's, again, that's the scene where you would have all the fun stuff. Okay, we're learning how to use our powers and be a team. But none of that happens. So like you said, Daniel, by the time you get to the end and they're like, oh, let's team up. You're like, what the? It doesn't make, there's absolutely no... internal logic to the film of why things happen. There's no equal and opposite reaction to any of the things. Like, it just seems like a massive conglomeration of random crap. And we put it all together and hoped evolution would happen, but it didn't.
What it really feels like is that they made what should have been the first act. They dragged it into two whole acts, skipped the middle act, and then went straight to the last one. That's exactly what it feels like. And they should have shed at least 30 minutes in the middle of this movie and kept it in the beginning. For one thing, okay, so we have our four Fantastic Four. It's probably 20 to 30 minutes in before we even meet Johnny Storm. That's a problem. Like, you need to be a lot faster than that. Like, we need to get to the point where they're a team and where they have powers and they're working together so much faster, so then we can actually have at least a third of the movie devoted to them doing superhero things. But we don't get any of that. It skips all of that, as you said, and then just goes straight to the final battle, in which Doom must be the, like, most easily defeated villain of all time.
No, they work together. That's why it worked. That's why it seemed so easy.
You know, I don't remember a lot of the original, you know, the early aught Fantastic Four film, but I do remember a scene when they all come back to Earth and Chris Evans is, snapping his fingers and starting fires, and Jessica Alba is turning invisible, and whoever that guy is can stretch things. And Chris Evans, of course, because, by the way, the Chris Evans-Michael Chiklis relationship in that film is 1,000 times better than any relationships we get in this film. But he's like, well, how come you can't turn it off? Why are you always a rock dude? And, like, that line of dialogue, that scene, it encompasses more understanding of the characters, more character development than anything we get, and more fun, more poking, teasing. You know, we get a little bit of the poking, teasing, like maybe a dusting of the poking, teasing of the Johnny Storm, Ben Grimm relationship at the end. Far too little, far too late. And it was, it showed, at least the movie's not great, but it showed that they understood the characters much, much more than this film does.
So it's a $120 million project, so the effects and the production of it have to look good, right?
Apparently not.
Okay, so nobody can see this, but in our notes, I have this wonderful picture of Crash Test Dummy plus the Terminator equals Doom. And that is exactly what he looks like. He looks just like a Melted. Crash Test Dummy that got, like, mutilated by a Terminator and with some, like, green highlights instead of red. He looks so bad. I mean, it's like a walking, like, plastic doll. He's horrible.
This is the same studio that brought us Ian McKellen as Magneto. They can do good bad guys. Why can they not figure out how Doom works? It's really not that hard. Like, he is one of the best bad guys in all. Like, Darth Vader draws influence from Dr. Doom. Like, Dr. Doom has been around forever and is so cool. And they just don't understand. Like, is this the worst part, the most frustrating part of the movie? I think possibly.
I have to say, like, I walked out of the theater and I texted Daniel immediately and was like, what are we going to do? We have to do a podcast about this. And then, so I was the first one to see it. And then I said to Matt, I was like, well, maybe you'll like it. Like, I really hope you do. And then we can tell you why you're wrong. And then I opened this outline. I didn't get a chance to talk to you before that. And you didn't get a chance to tell me what you thought. And I opened that outline at work when I was supposed to be working. And I spit my coffee all over my desk when I got to the Crash Test Dummy. I was like reading through this outline. I'm like, wow, Matt's definitely on the same page. And then I get to this amazing graphic with the Crash Test Dummy. I was just like, that is so accurate. I cannot unsee it now. So, maybe you should make that our header for the show. Crash Test Dummy.
So good. It is really frustrating when you're watching a movie like this, and I mean, we know what Hollywood is capable of with superhero films, with fantastic films, fantastical films. I mean, just amazing things. And there's so much. I mean, when they go to the other planet, I never for one second ever think that there's any part of that planet that's real. Even the spaceship they get out of, it all looks so badly CGI'd. And I don't have a problem with CGI. I just have a problem with bad CGI at this point, because we know we can do it well. And there's just, you know, there's just nothing about this movie except for, I think, the thing that really looks good. Like, that I could tell they'd spent some time on, and I felt like it worked. But everything else, I mean, I was hopeful. I mean, it's like, okay, the thing looks good. Hopefully Dr. Doom will be cool. No. No, Dr. Doom looks like a turd.
Again,
it's been molded into this crash test dummy.
Can someone tell me where he got his hood, his whole cloak from in the first film, or the first scene where he is, quote-unquote, Dr. Doom? He's existed on this planet for a year, we're told.
Show, right? Not told. That's always good storytelling.
Okay, yep. Does he eat? does he have to poop? Does he have green energy poops? I don't know. How does this work? Like, this makes... And then he showed up with a cloak that he never had, and then just can, you know, pop everybody's brains because reasons. Because... science, right?
Because things. Yeah. Yeah. Because, yeah, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
If it were fun, we wouldn't be asking these questions, you know? Like, if it were fun and we enjoyed it, then you don't think about stuff like that. And plot holes, you can forgive them because you enjoyed it. Whereas when it's this bad, then you start going, but wait a second. And then you start like really thinking about it. And then I think this is why when I walked out of the theater, I was like, wow, that was bad. And then for like 10 minutes, I was like, wow, that was really bad. And like, it was all kind of like coalescing in my mind. And I was rethinking about it. I'm like, but what about, oh my gosh. And that, and how did they do that? And why did they do that? And like, it's just, and Doom is one of those things. I'll just never get over that. Like, they flash forward a year. We don't know where he's been or what he's been doing or what his life has been like. And he just shows up, and he's, I especially love that they played up this like kind of creepy crush he has on Sue, which doesn't work, by the way.
Nothing
like
with
any
Sue
of the
works,
characterization.
Unfortunately, in this movie.
Yes, exactly. But he comes back and he's like, so anyway, I'm going to destroy Earth. Then he says to Sue, like, wish it could have turned out different. And then he leaves.
I mean, we could have been together, but whatever. See you, Earth.
This could have been us, but you play in. Like, what?
No. You don't realize that Doom TV is huge there. They have really great green energy shows, and it's all sponsored by Green Energy, and it's very entertaining. I tell you what, the Big Brother Green Energy show is beyond anything you've ever seen here on Earth. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Well, out of five, what would you rank this movie? Out of five stars. Or out of five Doom Dookies.
Good question. Can we do zero, or is it like one, two, three, four, five? One star being the worst?
You could do half stars, so you could give it like a half star.
Okay. I'll give it a half star for Michael B. Jordan. The end. I mean, that this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And that is saying something, and I feel really bad saying that, because as much as we've discussed all of the things that don't work on this podcast today, I don't think any of the three of us actually likes just spending a lot of time. Like, I feel almost like we're kicking a corpse, because this poor movie and the people that made this movie are just getting dragged all over the place. That's not what we want to do. Like, we want things to succeed. This one didn't. I'm sad that it didn't. It's really, really bad. Hopefully they do better in the future. And I'm sorry, guys. Thanks for trying. I'm sure you worked really hard.
Come back next time.
Yeah, basically. I don't know what else to say. Like, I feel bad. This movie makes me feel bad on, like, every level.
Well, you shouldn't feel bad. The only thing you did was go to the movie and be subjected to it because you were going to be on this podcast.
Yes, and by the way, I was sitting in the theater going, Matt Rushing, what are you, how dare, I can't believe I have to see, I'm sitting through this movie for
you. Hey, you know that you're going to be on Mockingjay Part 2 with me, and you're going to love that, so you'll be thanking me then,
It'll all even out
in the end, I hope. What about you, Daniel?
It's just this movie, it's not like unwatchable, but there is literally no fun to watching this movie. You're not going to have a good time. It's just drab and boring and not great. It's just, there's no redeeming quality for it. It's just not fun. And if you're not going to have any sort of enjoyment out of a movie like this, a comic book movie, then why even go? You know, if I had to rate it, I guess I would put it, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm going to say a 0.4 out of 5. Because, you got to keep the 4 theme going in there somewhere.
So just say no.
Yeah. You bring up a good point, Daniel, because I have a coworker who asked me, he was like interested, because I was like, I was trying to avoid the reviews, but I saw the cheese grater for your soul thing, and I was like, oh, God, I hope that one's wrong. And so he was interested, and now he was like, oh, man, you say it's so bad. Like, now I'm kind of, like, curious to go see it and see how bad it is. Let me tell you, this is not the kind of movie you're going to enjoy watching because it's bad. It's not awesomely bad, you know? It's not one of those kinds of movies where you're like, here's a good example. Batman and Robin. I think we can all agree that Batman and Robin is absolutely horrible. But you can still have fun watching Batman and Robin because it's so horrible, it's funny.
Great drinking games.
Exactly. This is not that kind of fun, okay? This is just relentlessly boring, miserable. And the most fun we've had about it with this is on this podcast. Like, I cannot even describe to you the lack of fun you will have. I'm sad.
For me, this is, I rated this 1.5 stars. That is because I enjoyed the thing. I thought he was good looking in the film. The way that they did the CGI for him, I thought that was good. And for me, I loved the score for this movie. And I loved the theme for this movie. It is just unfortunate that the theme didn't have a fantastic movie to go with it. It had this. And, you know, what I love about doing the 602 Club is the fact that we talk honestly and openly about things. We do try to be as positive as possible. And there are some times where the movie just makes that nigh impossible. And, in fact, talk about Mission Impossible. Go see that instead of Fantastic Four. We talked about that last week. We had a fantastic time talking about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation because it was so good. Andy, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording about the awfulness of what they did to Sue's character. Well, that movie had a fantastic female character that we couldn't stop raving about. So this is just, I turned to my wife and we both kind of looked at each other and I was like, well, it's not abysmal, but it's terrible. And it really just is. It is a terrible movie. And Daniel, I love what you said. I didn't have fun. I just didn't. I'm disappointed because for what Fox has done mostly with, I have liked a majority of the X-Men films, and I really think they're fantastic. In fact, Days of Future Past is one of my favorite comic book movies of all time. X-Men First Class is amazing. X2 is still good. The original X-Men. I even enjoyed the Wolverine a few years ago with just Hugh Jackman. I thought that was a great film for me. So, and all those are fun. They know how to make good movies with Marvel characters. They just can't seem to pull it off with the Fantastic Four. So, you know, I'm crossing my fingers that maybe next time it'll turn out better. I'm going to say that I won't be putting it on the schedule right away for the 602 Club. We'll be waiting. But I honestly had a great time talking about the Fantastic Four with you guys and kind of talking through some of the ways that the film just doesn't live up and maybe some of the things, I guess, that Hollywood studios need to look at. Just because it's a comic book movie doesn't mean it's going to be good. I mean, you know, geez, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comes to mind. That's a horrible film too, you know, but I'd still rather watch that than this. So, well, guys, don't forget to check out all the shows on Trek.fm. They're all over the place. We've got shows, like I said earlier, ranging from all of the different series, different perspectives, books and comics, behind the scenes, and then, of course, the 602 Club. You can find those at iTunes.com/Trek.fm and Trek.fm. If you are an Apple user, we are running a special promotion right now with the 602 Club. If you give us a review and a star rating on iTunes, you will be entered to win a $50 gift card, as well as the USS Vengeance from Eagle Moss. My friend Norm here, executive producer here on the network, is providing that. He's got an extra one. So go ahead. Get those reviews in. I've really appreciated all the reviews that we've been getting lately. It's been a lot of fun to see what you guys think about the show. I appreciate all the times that people reviewed or rated us, because right now we're still a 5-star podcast. So thank you guys. And we just want to say thank you for giving those reviews. So go out and do that. The contest will end in October, and we'll pick the winner at the beginning there of October. So you have plenty of time to get your reviews in, and they'll show up on iTunes. Guys, if you're not on iTunes, we are on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. You can go to the website and grab the RSS link, and you can also get the MP3 file. You can either download that or stream it from the website. So we're everywhere. That's you never have to worry about being away from your Trek FM podcasts. Another way that you can keep all the shows coming to each week is, of course, with patreon.com/trekfm, and you can help support the network. We're listener supported. We need your help. I'd really like to thank Ken Tripp. He's my associate producer here on the show, and you know, without him, the show wouldn't come to each week. There's a lot of costs that go into creating a podcast, whether it's storage space online or even just at home for all the files that we have. We've got all the other production of editing and software and all that stuff. It all takes time. It all takes money, and we need your help. So go to patreon.com/trekfm. You can learn how you could maybe be on the Patreon roundtables that Will Wynn's been doing. You could get exclusive content, producer credit, seats on the content development team, and so much more. So check us out there at patreon.com/trekfm. Appreciate the executive producers I work with, Norman C. Lau and C. Brian Jones. Those guys are amazing, and it's a lot of fun working with them on the network. Guys, goodness, before we go, tell everybody about your own podcasts and where they can find you online. Andy?
You can find me elsewhere on Trek FM with Women at Warp, where four women talk about Star Trek. You can also see me live tweet my first time watching Star Trek at First Time Trek, and I'm currently on Deep Space Nine. Woo-hoo! Which is really fun. Yep, it's Matt's favorite. So also, you can check out some of my older tweets. I'm doing an archive project at firsttimetrack.tumblr.com. So I've been posting the TNG tweeting there. So if you were not around in July of 2013, you can still take a look at those and see what it was like back then. So.
All right, well, you can find me on Twitter at 1UpDan. That's the number one, not the word, where I rant and rave about lots of different things. And you can find me also here on the network on Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated TNG show, where we have a fantastic 3 out of 4 with me, Darren, and Philip. And we just recently released our 100th episode here on the network. You should all go give that a listen. It's a really fantastic episode with lots of familiar voices if you enjoy Trek FM.
Well, guys, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram at MRushing. I'm also doing The Orb, which is Trek FM's dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast with Christopher Jones. And then I also do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, which is really the only place to get kind of new Star Trek when you think about it, with the latest novels coming out, all your favorite characters from the Prime Universe. We interviewed the authors as well. It's so much fun. I hope you'll check it out. I have my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Everyone out there, I'd like to thank you for listening, and y'all come back now here